Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Glad to have you company here on UK Health Radio. This week we're going to be talking about the links between time travel and dementia with Glenna Hegg, whose book How Old Are You Today? A Mother, a Daughter and the Game That Transformed Their Lives tells a remarkable story. Glenna will be joining me right after this from Jenny Reynolds. Jenny Reynolds and I'm Not The One, kicking off this week's edition of The D-Word, where my guest is Glenna Hecht. Glenna, it's great to welcome you as my guest here on The D-Word. Your book is How Old Are You Today? Dementia, a Mother, a Daughter and the Game That Transformed Their Lives. It's a long title, but I think it's a long story as well, isn't it, that we're going to be talking about.
Absolutely.
You are working as a HR consultant, am I right in saying that?
Yes.
And our lives change constantly, but you got a phone call from Chicago that changed yours a little dramatically, didn't it?
It did. And I was raised in Chicago and was living in Dallas, Texas, and have always, for my career, led human resources and training for very large companies, and was invited to come to Dallas and work in a large organization. So here I was sitting at my desk at that point for a very large advertising agency, worldwide ad agency. And the phone rang, and you pick it up. And I'm sure you've had those startling calls where you're holding the phone and you open up your mouth thinking the words are coming out, but nothing is coming out at all. And my cousin called me from Chicago and said, "Your mother is missing." Let me back up a minute, Pete. I'm an only child. So I was, of course, the one to receive the call. And was, "Oh my gosh, what do I do?" And she said, "You need to come as soon as possible." And I did what I believe so many caregivers do, is that in the moment you wonder, how do I handle my family and what do I do about my job? And those two are really challenging, and they kind of come together, and you hope you can figure out how to do both. And if not, how do I make ends meet, right? And so many people deal with that. I was very fortunate when I walked into my boss who headed up the company. I said, "I have to go home. Don't know how long this will be, and if you have to replace me, that's okay, but I only have one mother." So that became the beginning of the story, and didn't know what I would find when I flew from Dallas to Chicago and met my mother at her apartment. And so it's the beginning of a very long 9-year story. Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly. So you've seen your boss, you've got on the plane, you've arrived, and you say, you said first of all the girl was mum's missing. Where was she found?
Well, she had come home that night. She wandered out and was walking around downtown Chicago, apparently. And for, oh my gosh, it was at least 5 or 6 hours, she was missing. And then all of a sudden, I received a phone call that said, "Your mom walked in the door as though nothing had happened, and went up to her apartment." And the person that was at the front of the apartment building went upstairs to knock on the door and see that, A, she was inside, she was okay, and then said, "Your mom has come home." Now, that didn't stop my getting on a plane, but it was a sigh of relief to be able to say, "All right, I know she's safe." And now it is, deal with the next thing. And that really became a theme, Pete. And when I think about being a caregiver, you don't know what's coming next. This is not something that you're prepared for. And I'll share more about that, I'm sure. But I had no idea what that job entailed. And so really what I found my mantra became was, put one foot in front of the other and you'll deal with the next step as it comes up. So knowing she was home safe, and then the next morning flying back home to see what was the issue and how I could resolve it, because I thought it would be, a quick fix in and out, and then I could, return to my life.
Did dementia ever cross your mind at that point? Because you're obviously thinking, well, what's wrong with mum? Why did she go missing? And then there must be a thousand things come across your mind, but was the D word one of them?
No, it wasn't one of them. And I'll tell you what was one of them. I would get phone calls that were unusual. And things like, your mother came into the building office and said half a cake was missing in her apartment. And I would get on the phone with her and I would say, "Well, did you eat the cake?" And she went, "Maybe." And so okay, you know, obviously nobody came in your apartment, but it never dawned on me that there was something else cognitively going on. It was just, she's getting old. And, you know, mom was 85 or so, I thought. That's another part of the book. And it just was, she's senior, she's getting older. I know they get more forgetful, but never the D word. And actually, you know, you may recall having looked at the book, Pete, that when I found my mother that morning after I flew into Chicago, she was standing in front of her building and wearing a very long raincoat that dragged on the floor, on the ground. And she said, "The angels are after me. Will you save me?" And I was like, "Okay." And my cousin was in the car. I needed moral support. And I said, "Mom thinks that there are angels that are after her. We need to take her to the hospital." And of course, I didn't tell her that. That's not where she wanted to go. I said, "Crouch down in the car, then the angels won't see you." And I drove like mad through the city of Chicago to the hospital. And a number of hours later, probably 7 or 8 hours later, they wheeled her into emergency, ran some tests. And then later after that, the doctor came down with her and said, "You know, we think your mother has dementia." And that was really the first time, Pete, that I had heard that word. And he must have looked at the blank expression on my face, realizing I did not have a clue what that meant. And I was like, "Okay, well, you're going to fix her and she can go home, right?" And then I'm sure in his head was, "I better take 10 steps back here, explain what's going on, and tell her about what comes next." And he did. He told me that, you know, this was something that they were going to test for, but that I needed to be prepared. She probably could not live on her own, and this was something that was a forever situation. So it was shocking and a new word in my vocabulary. How's that? So absolutely. Learning the D word.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, learning very quickly, I think, from that experience. And I guess, you know, in your career, I mean, you fix things, don't you? You get a
Oh
problem,
my gosh,
look
yes.
at it, and fix it. So it must come as a real shock when you've got a condition there that somebody says to you, "Well, sorry, we can't fix this."
He didn't actually say that. And even if he did, I'll be honest with you, Pete, I didn't hear it. Okay. And you are absolutely right. as the head of human resources for some very large companies, the problems and issues tend to float uphill. And so anything that is challenging or difficult for the company would always land on my desk. So whether it was fixed payroll or these people aren't getting along or somebody quits or we have a lawsuit or whatever, I was the one that would fix it. And I must say, excellent at what I did. So my approach was, if I can fix this and I have for so many years, surely I can fix whatever is going on with her. And through moving her, et cetera, I tried to fix her. So when it became clear that, yes, she had the D word, dementia, and she could no longer live on her own, I had to very quickly find a place for her to live in Chicago. And as I went through her things, it caused a series of flashbacks. This is really the only way to describe it, Pete, was that I would look at her apartment and notice that she had dishes that had food in them that were in cabinets, or she would have 40 white shirts that were all a result of forgetting I owned one and then buying another, and bills that were unpaid and things that were hidden. And as I saw those, I experienced two emotions simultaneously. One was, how did I miss this? And the flashback of, oh, now the pieces are starting to fit. But also, what I think a lot of caregivers experience throughout their entire experience is a tremendous amount of guilt. How did I miss it? Could I have done something to change this? I wish I had been here more. And I went through all of that, put her in a lovely location. It became clear quickly that my mom had a lot of energy, even for somebody that I thought was 85 years old. And the day I put her in the assisted living center, I found that she wasn't 85. She was actually 90. She'd been lying about her age my entire life. Oh, well. And she was in the facility, but she was a flight risk. Mom had a lot of energy and she would walk out the door all the time, as so many people experience with their loved one. And it became clear I needed to move her close to me. So I brought her to Dallas, Texas. And then I spent 2 years trying to fix her. I would research. I would go to symposia where I would learn about dementia. I would go to support groups and talk to other people. I even became a certified assisted living manager, thinking they know, they can tell me how to fix her. And after 2 years and a couple of very embarrassing experiences where I didn't act as the person I wanted to show up as, I realized dementia is not something you fix, it's something you face. And that became a very pivotal experience for me, and really the start of a mindset that eventually led to the game.
Which I guess that mindset is from trying to correct something to try and to connect to that person who, in all effects, has moved into another world, or is talking
Yes.
another language, and you have to learn that language and learn how to inhabit that world. And for the first part, that must be really tough when you've been, you've spent 2 years thinking, oh, I can deal with this, yeah, I can fix it. And then suddenly the recognition that you can't, and then
Yes.
you've got to go down that whole journey of, well, how do I actually connect then?
It's very difficult. I'll tell you probably one of the most profound experiences that started to shift the mindset was I went to a support group. And yes, caregiving, no question, Pete, is the hardest job that I ever had. No job description, no handbook for an HR person, there were no rules. And I tried to learn from as many people as I could. And I sat down with a group of folks that had loved ones that had dementia or Alzheimer's. And they were in a very dark place. That's the only way to describe it. Really a sad experience, difficult. It was a lot about my life is this, I'm experiencing this. And what went through my head was, I'm not the person who has this disease. My mother does. And I can go out for dinner with my friends if I want to go see a movie or go dancing or have fun. I can, but I'm not experiencing dementia as a person who has dementia. I'm witness to it. And in that moment, I said, I'm going to make this the best experience for the two of us that I possibly can. I don't know what that is, but I am certainly going to try. And that was really the beginning of the mindset shift. Probably the most profound experience that caused me to, I wouldn't say give up trying, but give up fixing, was one day I visited her in the memory care facility, and she did what so many people with dementia do, repeated the same story over and over and over again. And I think at the fifth time I said to her, I heard you. And then when it just continued, I lost my cool. I lost my temper. And I stood up and said, I heard you the first time. And what was so surprising, nobody looked at me. Nobody flinched, nobody observed it. And that made me realize this is typical for what goes on in this facility. But here was the thing. It may be typical, but it's not typical for me. And it's not how I want to show up. And it's not the person that I wanted to be. And I was so embarrassed by how I behaved that I looked at her and I said, I have to go. And I literally ran out of the facility and sat in my car and cried for a good hour because it was mortifying for me. And I drove home and went into the closet in my bedroom, and I wanted to hide. Only way to describe it was to hide from, not from her, but I wanted to hide from me because I was not showing up as the person I knew I could be. And I cried and I fell asleep. And when I got up, I heard these words in my head over and over and over again. And it was observe and be patient and listen and travel. And I didn't know what any of it meant, but all of a sudden I felt kind of calm and decided, you know what? You're just going to be present. Just be a good daughter, be present. And for about a year, I would go in, I would hold her hand. We would have a wonderful time together. And then one day something remarkable changed. And that was truly the very beginning of me observing time travel and what led to the game.
Come home early. You come on big when you're feeling small. You come home straight and you come home curly. Sometimes you don't come home at all. So what in the world's come over? What in heaven's name have you done? You've broken the speed of the sound of loneliness. You're out there running just to be on the run. Well,
I got a heart that burns with a fever, and I got a worried and a jealous mind. Well, how can a love that'll last forever I get left so far behind? So what in the world's come over you? What in heaven's name have you done? You've broken the speed of the sound of loneliness. You're out there running just to be on the run. Dreadful sorrow, it's crossed the evil line today. How can you ask about tomorrow? But we ain't got one word to say. So what in the world's come over you? What in heaven's name have you done? You've broken the speed of the sound of loneliness. You're out there running just to be on the run. So what in the world's come over you? And what in heaven's name have you done? Broken the speed of the sound of loneliness. You're out there running just to be on the run. You're out there running just to be on the run. You're out there running just to be on the run.
Nancy Griffith and John Bryan and the Speed of the Sound of Loneliness here on The D Word. You can find us on all the social media platforms as Radio TDW, and the email is tdwradio@gmail.com. Be really good to hear from you. And if you miss any editions of The D Word, then all our shows here on UK Health Radio are available for listen again and download from the website ughealthradio.com. This week, my guest is Glenna Hecht, and we're talking about her book, How Old Are You Today? A Mother, a Daughter, and the Game That Transformed Their Lives. Which, you know, I think is an amazing story, and the way you portray it. And the one thing for caregivers is that it's very difficult during the time of it to realise that you cannot be 100% right every time. You're going to make loads of mistakes.
Yes.
And it's actually accepting that, okay, maybe I didn't do what I should have done there, but I can move on, which is exactly what you did.
Yes, yes. One of the things, and I just wrote about it this last week, is caregivers truly are my heroes. It is so difficult. And I learned two things that were lessons that I carried with me every single day. And one was just put one foot in front of the other, right? I couldn't get 10 steps in front of me because I didn't know what those were. So it was just take the next step, go and visit her, hold her hand. If she says something that you don't understand, think about it. You know what I mean? And so I really became somewhat methodical in how I approached it and being patient. But the second part of it was the most important, Pete, and that was to give myself some grace. Realizing that I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm trying really hard. And it's an important step to take with a loved one, and I knew that I wanted to do it the best I could for whatever time she had and whatever time we had together. So I would say one step at a time and give yourself some grace, because maybe what you do in that step isn't what you wish you would do, but you'll do it differently next time. And so learning from it and really giving yourself some honor and just being present. And so that's what I did. And the outcome was beyond anything I could have imagined.
Yeah, earlier on you said there's no guidebook or route map, but even if there was a guidebook on the route map, everybody's different.
Yes.
So, you still couldn't stick rigidly to that. Now, I've got to say, Glenna, I've done 320 odd of these shows in the last 7 years, and we have never put the concept of time travel and dementia together in the same sentence. But you
Yes.
achieved that with the game. I mean, tell us about how it all started.
Absolutely. So one day I went in to visit my mother, and she was in an assisted living facility. And let me paint a picture for you. It was, wood paneling and fluorescent lights that would kind of blink every once in a while. And there was a TV, a large TV. And it was playing a movie, and there were saggy couches, and people were sleeping in chairs. So it was kind of sad. I don't know any other way to describe it. And my mom was sitting in a wheelchair, and her looking up at the fluorescent lights, and she was posing, Pete. So she was sort of sitting like this, and she was looking at the fluorescence and saying, "Oh, I love the sun. It's so beautiful, and I love the sand on my toes." And what I'm thinking is she going into the tunnel? Is this what they mean right before they say goodbye? And so I'm checking and get leaning close. I'm kind of, "Are you breathing?" And she was joyous. Oh my gosh, she was so happy, and talking about her best friend in college and all the boys that they saw at the beach. And she was flirting. She was in this very sort of young, 20-ish flirtatious pose. And so happy and so joyous that I thought, if this is what the end looks like, it's pretty good. And she's very happy. And so for a number of months after that, I was bound and determined to go back to the beach. Just absolutely have to get there. And I would say to her, "Are you at the beach?" And she'd go, "No." And the conversation was over. Or I would say, "Are you with your friend Amy?" "No." Conversation over. "Are you in your 20s?" And she'd look at me like I was crazy. "No." And I finally thought, okay, obviously I am not handling this well at all. And one day I said to her, "I have forgotten, how old are you?" And she said, "Guess." Okay. Well, that day she had a lot of energy. So I said, "Are you 80?" And she looked at me and went, "No." And, "Are you 70?" And she went, "No." "Are you younger?" "Yes." And we would land on an age. And it wasn't as though she was remembering the age. She was the age. And I went, okay, this is very interesting. So I tried it a couple more times and realized that this was kind of a game. And it became a ritual. And every time I saw her, I would start with, "May I ask you a question? How old are you?" And some days she was much older, and some days she was much younger. And one of the things that I put into the book, because I learned so much over time, is that the game had rules. The game had an art to playing it, and I'll explain that in a little more detail. And that there were certain things that I would do where I made errors, and I went, okay, here's another thing to remember as you go forward with this. And really, for almost 7 years, we played the game nonstop until the day that she passed away. Now, the way we played it changed a little bit because, as you know, people with dementia eventually have issues swallowing, and so she could really not talk as comfortably. So we started to play the game, and I would ask her to squeeze my hand, and I would say, you know, may I ask you a question? Squeeze once for yes, twice for no. And she'd, and I'd go, are you X years? And she'd go, squeeze no. Are you older? And she would squeeze my hand. And so the questions became different because they were much more limited as time went on. But we still could connect. And that was quite amazing. And then, you know, as we were progressing and she, you know, passed, and she passed 19 days shy of 100 years old, which was amazing. I started to say to myself, I wonder if this was just for me or was this for other people as well? And I started to share the game and had really miraculous results and outcomes. So that's when I said, I need to write this book and share it with so many people because the concept of time travel and dementia really are on top of each other. And it took a long time to write the book, which I'll share with you in just a bit. But yes, the game was quite remarkable. And I'll say a bit about the rules of the game and the art of the game. You all in the UK play soccer, right? And we play football, but there are rules. You know, how do you play? How do you make a goal? What's considered correct? What's considered incorrect? And then once you get the rules down, then it becomes strategy. So, you know, I'm up against another team. This is how they play. So, this is what I need to do to show up. And I call that the art of the game. So, in most things, whether it's playing chess or soccer or football, you learn first the rules and then the art. In this game called the game of D or dementia interaction, it's really all about the art first because the rules keep changing. So what you experience one day may not be what you experience the next. And the art of the game, I say, is how you show up. And the things that help you stay centered and gracious, and to show up as the loving person that you want to show up and not lose your cool. And so that's really the art of the game.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real. But that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, joining those two things together, I always say that a lot of the best ideas in the world are simple things that people have just passed by. And in joining time travel and dementia, I think you've just hit totally upon that. Now, we're running a little bit out of time, but I want to take you to
Yes.
one chapter in the book. And that chapter is When I Met Me. And I want you to tell our listeners just a little bit about it.
Absolutely. It is my favorite chapter in the book. And even though I wrote it, every time I read it, I start to cry. Mom at that point was in this experience for quite a number of years. She was in a nursing home at that point, and I visited her all the time. And they would leave a chair next to her for me. And I went in one day, and just imagine a large kind of cafeteria dining room with hundreds of people and tables and, checkered cloths and fake flowers and the things that they try to use to, have people feel more like home. And my mom, when I went up to see her, was sitting like this. And she was, kind of rocking. And every once in a while, she would do this. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be an interesting day. And when I started to play the game, we landed on an age. My mom was 39 years old, which was the age when she had me. And I said to her, ask the question, do you have children? Yes. Do you have a boy? No. Do you have a girl? Yes. What is the girl's name? And they had to be very finite questions. And she said, the miracle baby. And I knew that they were talking about me. Mom had had a number of miscarriages, and she was supposed to go in and have surgery. And the doctor said, I'm not feeling good about this. And she was pregnant with me. And so just imagine, here you are as an adult in a crowded room looking at your mother who's 39 years old, holding an imaginary baby, and you're the baby. And so it's truly like a science fiction kind of story when you think about it. And I said to her, what was it like having the baby? And she screamed at the top of her lungs, it hurt. And everybody in the room froze. And I looked at them and said, that's okay. And then proceeded to ask her questions. What do you do with the baby? And she told me about washing the baby and feeding the baby and rocking the baby and all the things that you would normally do. And I said, do you sleep very much? And she said, no, I'm afraid if I go to sleep, the baby will die. And here I am trying to think about what do you do to answer or say something for that. And honestly, Pete, I prayed for the words. And so I just sat for a minute and I thought, and then I went, I've seen the baby. She's lovely. She's happy. You were a great mom. And this was the visual. She was holding me. Her arms went up and she kind of leaned over. You know what happy looks like. And she smiled. And then in the next moment, it was though she became a puddle and just on the floor. And she said, can I go to sleep now? And I was like, absolutely. And I called over the aides and they brought her back to her room. And it was the most surreal experience. I walked out of there again and sat in my car for about an hour and cried. And I called my best friend and said, you're not going to believe this, and shared the whole thing. And she was the one that said, you have got to share this with other people. It's extraordinary. And so I got to meet me in a very different experience than I think most kids have with their parents, right? You ask your mom, what was it like when you had me? And she'll say, oh, that was so many years ago when I was in labor for 10 hours. It's not important. And so instead of it being a memory, it was being right there. And just so grateful and blessed that I had that opportunity.
And a great opportunity it was, and also to just help other people in realizing they're not alone in what they're going through in terms of caregiving. and everything that, you know, that happened to you from kind of chapter one all the way through to the end of the book. We start off with someone that, you know, hadn't even heard of the D word, and then
Correct.
suddenly we end up with someone who appreciated everything that went through, and the real connection you had with your mum. So I've got, you know, congratulate you on putting all that down in words in the book, because I think it's great. And I would urge everybody to go out and have a look at it. I know it's available on Amazon, and other booksellers are available, as I'm supposed to say. And unfortunately, we're running out of time, Glenna. So all I'd like to say is thank you so much for being my guest on the D Word and sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me. And I encourage everybody, please read the book, try the game, and know that you are heroes and that you can do this and one foot in front of the other. So I'm cheering for you. Thank you so much, Pete, for having me.
Well, thank you, Glenna. And remember, everybody listening, this is the day that you put together time travel and dementia, because they do go together. Thanks to Glenna. The book is How Old Are You Today? A Mother, a Daughter, and the Game That Transformed Their Lives. And it's available from all major booksellers. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angelo, my production assistant. Next week, I'm taking a week off, so we're going to be turning back the clock with the D Word Revisited, first recorded in July 2024, when I met award-winning fundraiser Manny Singh Kang. So until then, thanks for your company, and take care now.